Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
Thanks for joining us. My name's Shannon Dakin, and on behalf of the Flipper Board, I'm very pleased to welcome Bruce Dodd to the podcast. Bruce is well known to many in our corner of the family law world up in sunny Queensland, and no doubt too south of the border for his work in New South Wales and other places. He's practiced almost exclusively in family law for over 25 years. Bruce is a barrister in Brisbane, a nationally accredited mediator, FDRP, and arbitrator. I'll let Bruce tell you more about his long and distinguished career. So without further ado, Bruce, I welcome you to the mic. Thanks for joining us. We're so thrilled to have you.
Thank you, Shannon. So first of all, I should thank you for that kind invitation, particularly as it's closer to 30 years rather than 25 years. But that's completely fine. Off to a good start.
Tick. So tell me a bit about your journey in family law to today.
Full disclosure, Shannon's given me a couple of questions to think about, and I was reflecting on this, and probably the way to answer that is to focus on the luck that I think I've had to get this far in the what is a really difficult area of law in my view. And luck operates in a couple of different levels. I came to the law as a consequence of doing a Bachelor of Arts and Law degree at University of Queensland. I grew up in country Queensland, a place called Warwick, so I went to a local high school there. Came to Brisbane, felt a little bit overwhelmed, went to one of the great residential colleges of the University of Queensland and found myself distracted by a number of different things. So I came out of law degree having not done especially well, thinking what I was going to do. As a consequence of not doing particularly well in my studies, I found it difficult to get a job immediately, and in fact had embarked on a secondary school teaching degree for a couple of weeks before I got a call to come to do articles at a firm that was then known as Biggs Fitzgerald on the north side of Brisbane. So my first piece of luck was really to have as my master a fellow by the name of Jeff Biggs, who a lot of you will probably know. He's been around for a long time, longer than me, fortunately. But he came into my life as my master at exactly the right time because of his veritable excitement in family law. He's the type of guy who loved the law and loved life generally. So that was what I really needed at that time of my life, because coming out of a law degree at University of Queensland, I think the words love and law really never came into the one sentence. So that was very helpful for me. Not only was he good in the sense of being a good master, but he was also someone, as I said, who was interested in life more generally. So at the end of each day, many times during the week, we'd have a beer and talk about stuff more generally, talk about politics, sport, literature. He introduced me to the works of Gore Vidal. So it was something that was an important part of my life at that time. So that was my first part of my articles there. So people, those young people out there, articles is a thing that... In my worldview, was much preferable to PLTs, but that's just my view about that, because it made you really do all the dirt work and grunt work as a junior lawyer, not getting paid particularly much at all, and in my view, gave me very good training, because you came out of that two-year training ready to be a solicitor, in a sense. So I was there for a year or so after I qualified, and then moved to the United Kingdom for a number of years. So I was there for about 7 years, 6 to 7 years. Second stroke of luck was to work at a firm up in northwest England, lived in a place called St. Bees, which some people may know as the start of a long-distance walk called the Coast to Coast Walk, but also worked in a town called Whitehaven. So the biggest employer up in that part of the United Kingdom is a huge nuclear reprocessing plant, which no one really hears about very much, but was big in the United Kingdom. And so that's sort of West Cumbria. It's the west coast of the Lake District, which a lot of people might have heard of. Second stroke of luck was to work in a firm, and then I became a partner in that firm. But the person who was my partner and then sort of master, I suppose, then partner, was also a very good lawyer as well, lady by the name of Judith Crisp. But she was a machine when it came to being a lawyer, knew how to get through work particularly well, knew how to manage files, which was particularly important. The stroke of luck also working in a place like that, which was actually one of the most remote places in England, I suppose, to work in terms of law, was it was so far, it was probably 3 hours away from the nearest big place to practice, such as Liverpool or Manchester. So there weren't many barristers around, so you're doing a lot of advocacy yourself. You turn up at court and run 6-7 matters yourself in a morning. Before the particular judge who might be there. So you learnt relatively quickly how to deal with some issues, and you were just thrown in the deep end, and that was just the way it was. Also did a bit of criminal law up there as well, which I think also held me in good stead. So then coming back to fast-forwarding 6-7 years, came back to Australia. Third stroke of luck was probably ending up at a firm that was headed by a lady by the name of Margaret Jones. There'll be some of you who may know her. Many of you won't. But she was from that exceptional cohort of lady practitioners who I think were at the sort of the vanguard of practitioners at a time when it was mainly male-dominated profession. So in terms of those people, there's people such as Nita Stratton Funk, Leanne Spellican, Dixie Ann Middleton, Kay Feeney, just naming a few off the top of my head. And Margaret Jones was a very good lawyer in her own right. The thing that she, I suppose, taught me as well, and these are the things you just pick up as you go along, don't be afraid to ask the dumb questions. So she was a master at asking the dumb questions, because in finding the answer to the dumb questions, you really understand the complexity of a case. And so she was exceptional at that, and exceptional also at ensuring that, which I'd also learnt from Jeff, I think, as well, that humour is an important part of what we do. So that was my career in terms of being a solicitor, was at Jones Lawyers, and then that sort of morphed into a couple of other firms, Jones McCarthy and then Norton McCarthy, and so that led me to a position in 2016/17 of moving to the bar. So that was that's the journey so far. In terms of going to the bar, also stroke of luck in the sense of where I've ended up. I've had the good fortune of being on a floor, which is level 14 at Inns of Court, where there's a lot of really good barristers there, and also people who I count as close friends. My junior master was Ted Jordan, who's one of my best mates, but also an exceptionally good lawyer, very smart man. So very helpful for me. He'd been a mentor over the years to me as well. Senior mentor was Jacoba, so I could bounce a couple of things up. Sorry, Jacoba Brash, Justice Brash, sorry. I should probably refine that a bit more. And also was helpful. But there's also just a number of people on that floor who are good people that you can talk to at any particular time. So that's really my journey so far. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
But. Yeah. And so what drew you to the bar? Why the bar?
Why the bar? It probably got to a point in my professional life where I needed a change, and I didn't realise how much I needed that change until I went to the bar, and I might explain that a bit further in a moment. But there was a couple of options for me in terms of what I might do at that particular time, i.e. stay as a solicitor. or go to the bar. And ultimately, I just thought two things. Answer these questions, I suppose. Would I regret if I didn't do it? And the answer was yes. And secondly, what was less risk for me? And I think financially, professionally, etc., going to the bar was probably going to be less risk. So, but as I say, when I went to the, it's only after I went to the bar did I realise how much I needed that change, in the sense that I was probably a little bit over dealing with clients on a day-to-day basis, and which still comes back to a point I was discussing earlier with Shannon before we even started mm-hmm. this today, whereas I think the solicitor branch of the profession has absolutely a harder job than we do, in the sense that you have to manage clients on a day-to-day basis. I think I probably get on with people relatively well, but I just couldn't handle dealing with people on such a significant basis as what solicitors have to do. Obviously, by the time we see people, they have been probably under the care of a solicitor for anywhere between a month to 2 months to 6 months to a year to 2 years. So we just see the pointy end of that. So I was probably a bit over that, probably a bit over management issues as well, more generally, which comes with being in a law firm. And that's no particular, I think, secret about how to deal with people in a law firm, but that was probably a little bit over that. So I was a bit selfish about that, I suppose. So just wanting to do my own thing. So, but those are some of the things you don't recognise until you're there.
Doing the do.
Yep.
And I think some of our listeners would be interested, if they were looking at making the jump to the bar, what does an average day for you look like?
Well, this is one of the beauties of the bar, particularly in the area of family law. There is simply no average day. So a day can include, for instance, a prep day. So a prep day is just reading a brief, locking yourself in your room and just going through that brief systematically. For myself, it's the same as probably what I used to do a bit as a solicitor, but more so this is effectively a project-based business. That's what barristers do. So you get a brief. I systematically go through the whole brief and just make a chronology as I go. So that helps me read that. And again, full disclosure, I usually don't read the instructions to counsel until I've read the whole brief, because I want to form my own view about some things before I see what very helpful comments by instructed solicitors might have had, so I can tell them in a nice way they're completely wrong. But that's that can be a day. Okay, so that's one day. Another day might be an interim hearing. So interim hearing is really, as most people will know, trying to refine your case. Generally, interim hearing is trying to refine your case as to the lowest common denominator, running an argument that you can really do in a couple of sentences effectively, and just having that sort of elaborate on that case theory. But, you know, interim hearings these days are a lot easier than they used to be, in the sense that you have that 10-page rule, so you only possibly have a couple of affidavits to read, possibly some reports, some subpoenaed material. So it's all very confined and refined, which I think is a good thing. But again, interim hearing is more about potentially being flexible on the day and dealing with negotiations of people at court, taking on board what a senior judicial registrar might be saying to you and dealing with that. So that can be interesting. I do a lot of mediations, so that is a different day as well. So that hopefully doesn't involve a significant amount of reading, as you will know, Shannon. But so that's another day. And then longer trials. If you have a long trial, one thing I was reflecting on as well, a long trial is not only the mental effort of having a long trial, but I've decided the way to approach a long trial is to treat it like a marathon and just don't peak at any particular time. Clearly, you have to potentially during cross-examination and doing submissions, but it's really just getting up every day, having your processes in place. Sounds like a footballer, which I clearly am not. And then getting through that, you know, and just because if you peak too early in a a long trial, then you just have nothing left by the end of the day six or seven, for instance, which is of course so significant. So
you need that endurance.
You need that endurance. So and you will feel physically incapacitated at some time during the trial. Then there's other matters, of course. If you're appearing in the the appellate court, or that involves a significant amount of stress, a number of, late nights, and just trying to work out what those particular judges might be thinking on any particular day. So to really answer your question, there's no particular average day. Completely varied. And so the other one is, of course, which is so important, is conferencing as well. So that... in itself is a different day as well. So,
and so getting into some of the highs and lows, and I think you've touched on some of the good points of being a barrister. What would you think is one of the best things about being a barrister?
Well, the best things, I guess, is, again, what I've sort of touched on firstly is the complete variability, that there's no same day. Okay. So, it's not something where, as a solicitor, you would be doing days and days of reviewing disclosure, for instance. So complete variability. Secondly, you really don't have management issues, I guess. So there's some things that you have to deal with from time to time, but that's not something you have in your day. Thirdly, you're, again, at that pointy end of matters where there's a real art, I think, and a real benefit and a real high from influencing the one person who actually has to make the decision in a case, irrespective of what anyone else thinks about, and refining a case and getting them to agree with what your view of the case is actually can give you, bizarrely, some type of adrenaline high. So there's that. There's something about being involved at a cross-examination that you know is going really well, that is also, a great feeling, to be frank. And that cross-examination is really, in my view, about having a conversation with someone. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be something where you're destroying someone. Really, the best cross-examination is where you tease stuff out of people just through asking some questions. So...
And what about some of the more challenging aspects of being a barrister?
I think the challenging aspects, the most challenging aspect is the juggle. I'm obviously cognizant of the fact that that operates for all people who practice in family law. And the juggle comes on a number of different levels, I think. There's just the practical juggle. Because you're self-employed... and people are contacting you, both directly or through your secretary, for instance, to do work. The trick is, and you want to be able to say yes to everyone, because people, as part of, they're ringing you up because they obviously think that you have some understanding of what you're doing. So there's that whole ego thing where you go, okay, well, you must think I know what I'm doing, so I want to make you think I know what I'm doing, so I'll say yes to that. So the juggle is, if you take on too much work, then that affects just whatever else you might have down the pipeline. The juggle then also operates on a mental basis as well, and use the word well-being basis, is trying to make sure that you get the work-life balance right, because, again, as a consequence of being so... again, saying yes to work, you get caught up in just, it almost becomes never ending. So in terms of how to deal with that juggle is really difficult, So because if you have a particularly difficult matter and you're working long hours, that's going to, particularly for someone who's not as young as they used to be, that's just going to have a physical impact upon you for other things that you're doing during the week or during the next couple of weeks. And ultimately the person that you might be representing in 2 weeks doesn't really care what you did 2 weeks earlier. They want you to, give 100% of your ability on that particular day. So it's, and then the other, and I'll come back to one point about that in a moment, but the other point is just, you know, getting stuff out of your head. Like if you don't deal with your work-life balance, you just get caught up in your own head. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's just, you get caught up in your own head about the practice of family law, and the juggle is trying to get out of your own head.
And how do you do that?
I don't know. That's what, it's the endless quest. It's the endless quest. But come back to, I'll just come back to one point of analogy I always use with people, particularly in practitioners, is I remember when I was at uni, I played a bit of hockey at uni, and I was playing for one of the, and Shannon will know because I think you went to a residential college.
Did you? I did.
Not a particularly good one, but you went to one anyway. And so it was, but I played a bit of hockey at uni, and so we'd be in this sort of inter-college cup. And I remember first year at uni, the coach of our team, who was a very good player, I think he'd played for New South Wales or something, but he was also one of those guys who would go out on a Friday night and get himself absolutely wrecked, I suppose. Turn up and the games would be at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. And he would say to us, I don't care what you did last night. I don't care what state you're in this morning. You have to get on the field and give 100% because none of the other stuff matters. And this is a guy who would be, you know, throwing up at halftime because he was still completely hungover. But I'm not suggesting for a moment, can I say, that everyone goes out and gets slaughtered the night before a big matter. But my point is this, is that the clients that you're representing in a particular time don't care what's going on with the rest of your life or what other matter you've had the previous week. You just have to get out and do 100%. So going back to your point about how do you deal with the juggle, it's I really don't know. It's just something that you just have to monitor all the time. The difficulty about being at the bar is I think it becomes really difficult to manage that, in my view. So so things I try to do, you know, exercise, because I'm old now, that probably means, you know, doing a lot of walking, that type of thing, just hanging out with good people, which you get in family law a lot. That's the benefit of, you know, the retreat, et cetera, or other sort of things. You get to hang out with a lot of people who do the same thing as we do, because I don't think in a general sense the the general public have any understanding of what we do in any particular day.
Yeah.
If you talk to people outside, if you talk to people in the street about what we do, they just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know? So... you know, reading, etc. You know, I think I remember Justice Murphy, when he gave a paper at once, one of his many really good papers over the years, one of the takeaways I took from one of his papers was just read as widely as you can about any particular thing, which I think is so important.
Excellent tip.
Yeah, as a worldview. You know, so I think that's important. I mean, going back to what we do, I have found it historically difficult to read fiction books because what we do is something that you would never see.
If it was, well, it is.
If you wrote some of the stuff that we saw on a daily basis in a fiction novel, you'd just be going, that's just ridiculous. That cannot be true. So I think that's really important. Holidays are important, you know, just taking a break and just getting out of your own head. So whatever works for you to get things out of your own head is so important in this game, because otherwise you just get burnt out, you know? So anyway, I hope that answers that question.
Oh, it absolutely does. And what do you think is the biggest secret that barristers don't want solicitors knowing about the other side of the fence?
Well, I can't tell you that, obviously.
Because it's a secret.
Well, I could, but I'd have to kill you and you You seem like a nice person, Shannon. So I don't think that would...
Bruce is going to hold on to his secrets.
No, I think the secret is, you know, it's just... for a particular person, it's just a lot better than being a solicitor in my view. So, like, only 100 times better, but I wouldn't tell you that.
Yeah.
For a number of different reasons, so...
Yep. And you touched on it before about some of the challenges of being a barrister, but how do you deal with the tough days in court?
I think that comes down to the definition of what is tough, right? So I think tough can operate on a couple of different levels. So tough can be for you personally. It might be, and it's a little bit difficult to see sometimes as a solicitor, but there's a different relationship going. Like I sometimes think of a courtroom as just like its own little world. So there's all these different relationships that are going on in a particular courtroom. And the relationship that matters most to myself when I'm court is between myself and whoever the judicial officer is. So when I'm in court, I generally, for instance, don't take a huge amount of notes what's happening in the cross-examination, because I hope my solicitor's doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm watching always what the judge is thinking. And a lot of the time they give what they're thinking away, but even if it's the minutest type of I'm watching what they're doing the whole time. So, and to see what they're thinking, because that's, the most important thing that we do. So it's working out what the judge is thinking any particular time and how to persuade that particular judicial officer to think about that our case is a good case. So going back to your point, that's probably a long way of getting back to a tough day. A tough day can be where a judge has given you a hard time, or judicial officer has given you a hard time, or challenge you on a particular point, and you may think on reflection, and this is what I do a lot, and I'm not saying it's a good thing, but second-guess myself all the time as to whether what I said in court or answered in court was exactly the right answer about some things. And so you might come out of court thinking, well, that didn't go as well as I would have liked, because there's always some things I should have said better or phrased it a bit better or simpler and got that particular judge to agree or disagree with what I was thinking. It might be that there's been a cross-examination that hasn't gone as well as it might have done. You mightn't be able to control a witness as well as you can. So there's that sort of personal toughness. So it might be that you come out of court thinking, I've just done a shit job for whatever particular reason. Yep. And that may or may not be true, but that may be what you're thinking in any particular time. So I think the best way to deal with that is get on and do something else that makes you think you're not a shit lawyer, which is really just move on to the next thing. And the bar lends itself to that because it is such a project-based sort of area of practice. So you just do what you've got to do and move on to the next thing. So, and you tend after a while, I find, and it might be because I'm having some Joe Biden moments, but I mean, I don't remember what I did last week. And I thought that was just me, but I think when you're, and I've spoken to other barristers about this as well, that's absolutely what happens, because what we're effectively doing is like cramming for an exam. So you're just absorbing a huge amount of information in a short period of time and then just dumping that. So I often find, I found it myself as a solicitor asking a barrister about a particular, being frustrated that they couldn't remember about what happened last week, but you just go, well, no one can remember what
it's
we
done.
Do because we just don't remember. And it's not just me, okay? But so that's one type of toughness. Another type of toughness is just having those matters in court where it's just an awful matter. So everyone involved in the matter is awful. And when I say everyone, that's probably a bit broad, but it might be that the subject matter is terrible, abuse allegations. It might be that a particular parent or both parents, for instance, are just not particularly nice people at all. But that's where this particular child or children has to go. It might be that your opposition or the solicitors in the case are overly invested in it. Might be running cases in a way that you don't think should be run. So you come out of court thinking, the first thing I need to do is have a shower. And you know what I mean? And secondly, I need to have a drink, which doesn't, again, lend itself to the idea of what we should be doing. But that's what you're thinking. So So the opposite of that sort of first type of toughness is, I think, is to do anything but what you've just been doing and whatever, you know, and that could be absolutely nothing. That could be just, you know, watching all those crap shows on Netflix that you people watch, like Bridgerton or something.
Yeah.
Or it could be, you know, it could be watching sport or something. It could be listening to music. Music's a big part of, you know, has always been a big part of my life. So there's different music I'll listen to at different times depending on how my day's been at court, or, you know, preparing for court as well. But, you know, just doing something else, hanging out with people who are not in family law, for instance, or just doing something else that's not family law. So that's probably how I deal with it, you know. So, and again, it's just a struggle to work out what is the best way to deal with it. So
constantly evolving, as you were saying.
Well, yeah, constantly evolving. And I think that's the thing about the bar to me. It's an endless quest to be to do the best, you know, to have the perfect day in court, which I don't think necessarily exists, although there's things that you reflect on. You say, well, that went pretty well. And then the endless quest to find what's a good juggle in life, you know, and still haven't, I mean, it happens occasionally, but, you know, that's for about half an hour, then something else blows up. But, yeah, you know, so that's probably my answer to that.
Yeah. So. And one last question for you, Bruce. What advice would you have for anyone thinking of joining the bar?
Well, don't, because that just means that there's less work for me. So that's as far as case. So, I mean, I think just a couple of things about that. I mean, further to what I said at the start, you need to surround yourself with good people, you know, to be able to talk to people about some things. And the bar sort of lends itself to that in the sense that it has this structured program of junior mentors and senior mentors, which I think is an important thing to have. And so, you know, you have to meet with those people and talk to them. But also, again, just being surrounding yourself with people that you can talk to more generally about how things are going. Secondly, financially, you just need to have a sense of what this is looking like. You need to have a budget worked out. You need to, you know, I think when you first come to the bar, the expenses aren't significant, or you can get away without the expenses being significant. So you need to work out what that looks like and plan for the worst and hope for the best. And I mean, and generally, you know, there's so much work in family law that, you know, I don't think you're going to be on the poverty line for any particular length of time, although it's going to be difficult to start with, absolutely, because, again, you know, you want to say yes to everything. So and so it's, again, working what that looks like for yourself. Thirdly, the other part of the financial is, I think, absolutely important, is because you're self-employed, is work out what tax looks like for you, because tax and superannuation, because you know, barristers, I think, are only up there with doctors in terms of people who cannot seem to work out tax situations. Mm-hmm.
That's a good tip.
So, you know, you need to have your accounts set aside for GST and income tax all sorted, you know, because otherwise you're going to get yourself completely caught out once you get on the hamster wheel. So that's and I think the other thing about it is, I think actually, perversely, being a solicitor helps you being a barrister as well. I think of a number of people who have been successful at the bar, have come from the idea of being a solicitor first, because you understand, because effectively our business is all about people, right? And once you get through all the various, you know, aspects and iterations of the Family Law Act, what we're really doing is trying to sort out people's lives on a fundamentally personal basis. So I think having been a solicitor assists in that absolutely, because you understand what people are doing and the, you know, the pain and trauma they've got to get to the stage where they're at. So I think that in itself is of benefit. Clearly, I'm not saying that you can't make it if you haven't been a solicitor, but I think that's probably of some assistance as well. So That's probably what I would answer that question.
Bruce Dodd, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, Shannon.
I hope you join us again soon.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.